All my life, I've been a soldier of fortune. Did what I had to do to get the job done. And get my team out alive. Usually with the business end of a weapon. This mission shouldn't have been any different. But it turns out, some problems can't be solved with a bullet.
You are on the front line of the biggest battle mankind has ever fought.
Change has come to America.
The truth is out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
From a Dachshund-protected bunker somewhere in the heartland, this is PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to the bunker.
It's Monday. June 30th, 2009. Woke up this morning. It was almost July. How did that happen?
Is today June 30th or June 29th?
June 29th. Sorry, I was so used to typing in delivery dates for tomorrow. Tomorrow's June 30th. I woke up and tomorrow was almost July. How did that happen?
That's Gilbert time for
you. That's right. We're coming to you from the future, which is where you're going to spend the rest of your life.
And exactly. And you're going to spend it watching this movie if you're not good.
That's right.
The opening clip comes from a movie that we were forced to watch yesterday.
Compelled by the
it was like an
recommendation.
We couldn't look away.
Yeah. Well, we will have reviews posted at WatcherMagazine.com, no doubt, of The Devil's Tomb, which looked very interesting. Stars a couple of our favorite actors, Cuba Gooding Jr. and Ron Perlman.
I don't know if I can stay, keep from hurling long enough to write it. Just the thought of the movie. Oh, my gosh. I took a look at IMDb today to see how it had been rated overall, and it was 4.1 out of 10.
Which is not terrible, but it's
not... Oh, gosh,
not...
I think that's way too high. Like I said last night, I gave it 1.5 donuts out of 10.
1.5 donuts out of 10?
And that's only because there was a halfway decent plot somewhere in there.
And that's the frustrating thing about The Devil's Tomb. It was almost there. It had the potential. It had an excellent concept. It had wonderful actors. At least as far as the principals were concerned, Ron Perlman is always great to watch, even in a bad movie.
Yeah.
Cuba Gooding Jr., who played a special forces captain, but was very restrained in his role. I mean, he's played some roles where he's been very energetic, almost frantic. And in this role, he was very subdued, almost like he was deliberately trying to, downplay the level in the movie. But yeah, the writing needed work. Just some bad things that you come to see in bad movies. Like, okay, no special forces soldier would ever do that. No special forces soldier would ever wear a haircut like that. Special forces soldier on a mission like this would not allow himself. And there were some things that were just...
We lost count on the number of movies that were being plagiarized in this film.
It was almost like... What did we say that this movie was like? It was like Aliens.
Parts of it were like Aliens.
Right.
Parts of it were like The Shining. Parts were like... the Stephen King miniseries.
Storm of the Century. Right.
See, parts of it were, there were so many things that we said, some of the lines were directly lifted from other movies. There were lines in there from Aliens, and there was music in there that sounded just like Aliens.
And there was even a character named Hicks, which was the character played by... What's his name? Michael Biehn.
Michael Biehn was Hicks. That's right.
So, there were a lot of similarities there. They go into a secret site, an enclosed space, and the promise that the movie held out was that here we were finally getting a Hollywood film directed by Sean Connery's son, no less, Jason Connery, that ties together the alien agenda with the Nephilim, because they get down there and they find this bunker. Almost two-thirds of the way through the movie, they finally reveal this thing that looks like an alien gray, but it's one of the Nephilim. And we're like, oh, okay, finally, a motion picture that ties these two phenomena together. But then, and just at the end of the film, when there's almost a salvation message, almost, not that you'd expect one from a Hollywood movie, but it almost gets to that point where Cuba Gooding character.
Well, don't spoil it.
I don't want to spoil it. Anyway, it almost gets her, but not quite. So,
but it had potential, and we were sitting there literally groaning in places. And there is nudity. There is
a brief nude scene.
Lot of violence.
Violence and swearing, and so yeah, you've got little bits and pieces. Couldn't decide if it wanted to be another Aliens like monster type movie, or a supernatural thriller, or a zombie film. It was, and maybe that's why Snark liked it. Maybe that's why Snark liked it, because the zombie film, the zombie aspect of things. But it was like the crowning, the cherry on the cake of the movie was that the expert whose mission in life was to save the souls of those who'd been sucked in by the enemy, said that Hebrews 9:22 was from the Old Testament. Hebrews is in the New Testament. Oh,
and we've got a guy there who says, I speak all kinds of languages, and he reads Latin and he speaks Latin.
And that's Hebrew.
Which is
a
dead language.
Yeah.
And then they come across a document. Well, what does this say? Is, I don't read Spanish.
Yeah.
Okay,
oh, well. So anyway, yeah, we, interesting.
It was a Spanish document that was an account supposedly in the original language from 2,000 years ago.
Right. Spanish didn't exist as a language 2,000 years ago, nor, and the account was supposed to be of an angel being cast down from heaven, which, again, a little research on this, the Nephilim would have been about 3,000 years prior to that. So anyway.
I don't know.
Well, it looked promising in the previews, and I know Snark likes the
film.
Sorry,
Snark. Hey, you joined Snark on Saturday night.
Well, yeah, because this was an entire weekend devoted to films that feature Ron Perlman in a supernatural battle against ultimate evil, which had been located in an underground bunker sealed by a giant hatch that should never under any circumstances be opened, which, of course, got opened, and there you are.
That
so,
always happens.
Yeah, and in both films, Ron Perlman gets pulled over to the dark side. So, it was. And actually, the Mutant Chronicles, which was his Saturday Night in the Snark Cave feature film, was, I think, a better movie.
Really wasn't too bad. Stylistically, it was very interesting to watch. However, stylistically, I found it was actually detracting.
Yeah, the attempts to make it look steampunk got in the way of telling the story, and the story was actually pretty interesting. It had echoes of the movie Silent Hill, if you've seen that, which is a very dark and but stylish film.
Oh, very stylish.
With Sean Bean, and it had some elements of. It almost looked Lord of the Rings in the way they were descending into this underground bunker. It's like, oh, they're in the mines of Moria. But aside from that, again, Ron Perlman, always good to watch in any movie he's in. John Malkovich was in Mutant Chronicles, too, and John Malkovich is always interesting. So
he should have been in more of the film. Didn't end the way I wanted it to. I predicted an ending. I was wrong, and it isn't because I was wrong that I'm saying this, but my ending would have been better.
Well, of course. So anyway, yeah, it was the Ron Perlman in underground bunker fighting ultimate evil weekend. Kind of an interesting theme that hadn't planned on it, but that's how it worked out.
No, but there you go.
But
well,
hey, there's lots
of
exciting
evil,
things to
stuff
happen
in the world.
Oh man, boy howdy. Well, where do you want to start first?
Well,
we've got the United States soldiers pulling out of Iraqi cities, but still hanging around in those super bases that we created around the country. So we're not actually going away. Speaking of the Middle East, as long as we're talking about, because that was the other interesting thing about the Devil's Tomb was that it placed.
You mercifully had forgotten the name of the movie.
The movie, yeah, and I brought it back up again. Oh, the horror! It puts the abyss essentially in Iraq, which is something that we've talked about with many guests over the past 3-4 years here on PID Radio. But staying in the Middle East. There have been a lot of news coverage about how the dissidents in Iran, the protesters, have been using the internet to their advantage. However, it turns out that Iranian intelligence actually had a leg up on these protesters. The folks in the streets were using Twitter and Facebook to get their message out. And as it turned out, according to Debka File and their intelligence sources inside Iran, the intelligence experts in Iran were intercepting communications being sent through these social networking sites. they set up a headquarters several months ago devoted to tracking internet use in Iran. And what they did was they essentially slowed down the communication. So people using the web would think, well, it's because of all the traffic that it's a little slow to respond. Well, no, what happened is the Iranian intelligence services were conducting what's called deep packet inspection of every type of text and video communication for three purposes. First, they would search for keywords like attack or weapons or cash or explosives, things like that. Meeting,
doxing,
of course. And this would flash within milliseconds on a computer screen somewhere inside the Iranian intelligence headquarters. Second, the controllers then would cause, as I mentioned, this delay in the online data transfer. Again, people think that it's simply the volume of traffic causing the web to slow down. No, it's that they're all being surveilled by Iranian intelligence. And third, the intelligence services then sifted through this data to not only to track dissidents who were sending out messages, but they also started planting false messages about gatherings and protests and so forth in order to flush dissidents out into the streets where they could be watched with eyes.
Yes. Well, if I remember correctly, the article also says they altered messages.
Right, right. In other words, planting false leads.
They did. Yeah, exactly. They did more than just plant messages.
Mm-hmm.
They took the ones that were being sent and altered them.
Right. Sending people to the wrong place.
That is amazing. Yeah. That technology exists,
mm-hmm,
to seamlessly alter a message. You send me something, I get,
right,
something that's not quite what you sent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you go off in the wrong direction. The technology, by the way, was installed late last year by Siemens, which is the German company, Siemens, mm-hmm, AG, and Nokia, the cell phone company.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Well, this goes along with a story that was repeated, a story actually broke back in January, mm-hmm, that the CIA admitted, or that it came out in some way, that the CIA had been planning another soft revolution in Iran with another color,
mm-hmm,
and this was going to be based on social networking sites.
Right, right. Well, apparently,
tip off to Iran.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, cheese it. We better get in there and get our cyber thugs going.
Yep. Iranian intelligence got on the ball, and they found willing equipment suppliers in Germany and Finland.
Boy,
in
it's
the
a
form
good thing
of Siemens
nothing
and Nokia.
Like that goes on here.
Yeah. Boy, haven't you noticed how slow the net is today?
Oh, but you know, it's just that heavy traffic.
A lot of kids downloading videos. That's all it is. Has nothing to do. Pay no attention to the man behind the white unmarked van in the street.
All of a sudden, a third voice comes in and finishes up. Well, Mr. Gilbert, I am saying to you, it's show over now. Bye-bye, sound funny.
Speaking of electronic communications, the folks at NASA who brought us such entertaining moon landings have announced that they have unveiled, they have rediscovered, located, found tapes of the original moon landing that were thought lost for 40 years. Now, if you're a skeptic, you might say, gee, maybe they've just decided that the CGI technology has now advanced to a point where they can actually fake a moon landing and make it look credible. We're supposedly going to see the clear images from the moon landing that we weren't able to see 40 years ago. Because the images that we were shown 40 years ago were not the feeds coming directly from the moon. They came from a 16-millimeter camera that was pointed at a black-and-white TV somewhere at NASA headquarters.
I see.
Yeah. So so we got the grainy pictures with the shadows and all that, and the ghosts, and you know the really lousy images, which 40 years ago we could believe. Would, you know,
yeah,
be the limits
by
of
the way,
technology.
If you've never seen Capricorn 1, go rent it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
By the way, do you think in that new movie that they're going to find that Wallace and Gromit are up there? Maybe that little cooker.
In the little cooker, yeah. Anyway, the original magnetic tapes have been found at an observatory in Australia, and which supposedly have been missing for 40 years, and now they're going to try to bring those images back to life and bring those out next spring sometime.
Well,
the article at the Daily Express in the UK says, crucially, they could once and for all dispel 40 years of wild conspiracy theories.
Yeah,
we look forward to seeing those.
Yeah, that'll be great. Well, speaking of things
that have
been...
No,
I got to go to this.
Okay.
Wait, sorry, we just came to leave the moon for...
Well, that's fine. Yes, we are
running
along.
Speaking of things that have been opened.
Yes.
The Basilica of Rome, mm-hmm. of St. Paul in Rome.
Oh, yeah.
Opened the sarcophagus, and it was carbon dated, and they're saying... They're not just saying it's from someone who lived at the time of St. Paul. They're saying this is definitely St. Paul. I'm not sure how they can say that. But they are now pronouncing that they have found out for sure those are St. Paul's bones. And they've even found an ancient icon that was painted of St. Paul. So we now have a face.
Now,
to go with the name.
I did see a little bit of the article this morning, but what I read was not nearly as in-depth of what you got. I thought that this fresco that they found was from like the 4th century.
Well, not the fresco. The fresco, they're saying, they're pretty sure is St. Paul. The
right.
fragments of bone in the sarcophagus were subjected to carbon dating, showing they belonged to someone who lived in the 1st or 2nd century.
Mm-hmm.
That's according to the Pope.
Okay, so I didn't read this story at all. Okay.
Oh, this seems to confirm the unanimous and undisputed tradition that these are the mortal remains of the Apostle Paul. The tomb also holds traces of a precious linen cloth, purple in color and laminated with pure gold, and a blue-colored textile with linen filaments. The tests were carried out by inserting a probe into a small opening in the sarcophagus. Also showed presence of red incense and traces of protein and limestone, which you would expect someone to put lime.
And also in a damp sarcophagus,
true.
You'd get some. And that was one of the obstacles that restorers had to overcome in trying to restore this fresco that was found a couple of blocks away from the Basilica of St. Paul, which is where they believe, you know, Paul was buried.
Well, exactly. He was beheaded. We do know he died in Rome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it could be that these are his, you know, little splinters of his bones.
Yeah. Well, the interesting, and we should post an image of the face to the show notes at PIDradio.com for those who haven't seen it. They believe this is the earliest icon now, the earliest artistic representation of the face of Paul. And it shows a fellow with essentially a triangular-shaped face and a pointed beard, almost like a first-century William Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
but many paintings of Paul have depicted him as being bald. So interesting that this sort of confirms that tradition anyway, or at least is consistent with that tradition. Speaking of things unveiled or not unveiled, EthiopianReview.com now is also... is reporting that Abuna Paulos, the patriarch of the Ethiopian church, was misquoted by Adam Kronos, the Italian newspaper, last week, that he never said he was going to reveal the Ark. So that will remain an object of mystery and mystery. Yeah.
Revelations of plenty. And, you know, sadly on Friday, many of you already probably know this, but Billy Mays passed away.
That was a shock. I mean, it was a week of some very prominent people, you know, passing on.
Yeah, we had a television icon, mm-hmm. Ed McMahon, an icon from my youth.
Mm-hmm.
We had a poster girl,
right,
swimsuit icon from the 70s, Farrah Fawcett. We had a pop culture icon, mm-hmm. the king of pop, who passed away, of course. Now we have a television commercial icon.
Yeah.
And we discover an icon of St. Paul.
Hmm.
It's a week of icons.
And the rest of the world wants the United States to give up control of ICANN. No, that's a stretch.
That's the
internet governing
body. That's a
body.
Big deal, though.
It is a big deal. I mean, the United States developed the internet, and it was essentially a defense project in order to tie universities and researchers together. And now the rest of the world wants the United States to give it up and make it, you know, a global thing.
I just suddenly thought about that scene in The Godfather where they're all sitting around.
Yeah.
I just want, the Godfather to share these politicians that he carries in his pockets like so many coins.
When have I ever denied you a favor? Well, I'm just going to dive into one other story here, which some may find disturbing. There is a cult that has gone through kind of a period of being very quiet, that is essentially stepped up and has announced that it is ready to begin growing and marketing itself again. It's the Family International, which was formerly called the Children of God, was founded in the late 1960s by a fellow named David Berg in Southern California. And his message was that we should all share everything, communal living, very much in keeping with the spirit of the late 60s in Southern California. And when I say everything, I mean everything, which led to accusations of child abuse, sexual abuse of children within this group. They moved away from that. They said, well, okay, we're not supposed to be sleeping with everybody, especially not the kids. But in 2005, the church suffered a very public and disturbing tragedy when the founder, a young man named Ricky Rodriguez, murdered his former nanny and a confidant of his mother. And the mother was married to the guy who founded this cult, and then shot himself and blamed this cult for ruining his life. So here we are now, 4 years down the road, and Angela Zerbe, who is the leader of this Family International now, after the passing of the man who founded it, her husband, David Berg, they are coming out and wanting to feed at the trough of those who are seeking, trying to bring them into the organization. Essentially, it's they've downplayed the free love aspect of this group's history, and they want to emphasize essentially as an image makeover. It's social gospel. So we may see more of this Family International, which is a relatively small group, maybe only 15,000 members spread across the world.
Is this group the one that's associated with the Phoenix family? River and Joaquin?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Well, I think the group that they were with was called the Children of God. I'm trying to look that up right now. Let's see. Was called the Children of God. Yes. It started by David Berg.
Right.
This is the same group that those kids grew up with.
Okay.
Their parents were members of this group.
So River and Joaquin Phoenix, right. They came out at a conference in Salt Lake City, a religious conference in Salt Lake City here over the weekend. And Karen Zerbe, who has inherited the mantle of leading this group after David Berg's death, is trying to shed the image that it had in the past of being just a free love hippie commune and trying to draw more people in. But again, regardless of how good the social gospel is, their intentions of helping others, and we've said this about Rick Warren, his intention of helping others is a noble goal. But if it takes the place of making disciples of all nations and making disciples and preaching the gospel, which is very simple, Jesus lived, died, rose again on the third day for the redemption of our sins. Anything beyond that, if that takes the place of that basic gospel, it's preaching the wrong message.
Exactly.
So, and I know that there have been, even though it's a relatively small group, people have been scarred by this organization, and they apparently are ready to undergo their image makeover and step up. And sadly, they probably will find a lot of people who are open to that that social gospel message. So, but anyway, keep your eyes open and just pray for wisdom and discernment. We certainly don't have all of the answers. In fact, there are some days I feel like I haven't got any of the answers, but we know where they can be found.
Amen.
And that's what we're turning to. Anything that we don't know, we can point you to the source.
Amen.
So, what else?
I think that's probably going to.
Yeah, I think we've run our course for the day. Why? We went to the moon and back and beyond. And of course,
I spent most of my day seriously not looking at news. I spent it reading something that I can't tell you about. So,
secret. Our email address is no secret. If you've got a comment, question, or a reference, something to point us toward, we'd be happy to hear from you at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter. We've also got the PID Radio Cafe over at Facebook, and there's a fan page there that we will eventually be giving extra treats for people.
Yes.
Join the fan page.
Extra bacon.
Exactly.
Check the show notes at PIDradio.com, and you'll see all the links there at PIDradio.com. Until tomorrow, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
This is PID Radio.